on, everybody? It's Buddy, it's Pals Pass Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, and this is WWE Last Week, your weekly look back at the week that was in the WWE. But, caveat to start off this episode, this is not going to be a typical episode of WWE Last Week. I'm not going to go through the entire Raw, the entire SmackDown, all that kind of stuff, because there's a couple big points that we got this week that I think deserve more deep diving into, so I'm going to focus on those points, and yes, mostly they are going towards Survivor Series, they're going towards War Games, which is now, you know, confirmed as War Games. We have our first War Games match, we have the beginnings of our second War Games match, and yeah, it's basically everything that's going on. I mean, the other company is doing other stuff. TNA isn't returning until January, so Survivor Series is what's on the ticket right now. Two things. Go back to the previous podcast on this channel or on this podcast. You will see I've brought back FlixFix again, which, you know, you guys know me. FlixFix kind of comes and goes whenever something grabs my attention. But we got a new trailer for the new Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which I'm really excited about. So if you want to hear about that, go check out that. That's the immediate previous podcast to this one. And looking ahead to this weekend, because nothing else is going on this weekend, I've got another episode of NXT Rewind looking at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. I'm really excited about that. It should drop in your feeds sometime around 9 a.m. on Saturday. And yeah, let me know what you guys think about that, because although I love doing all this stuff, the FlixFix, the WWE Last Week, the pay-per-view previews, etc., probably the thing I'm enjoying the most right now on this channel is NXT Rewind. So I'd really love some more feedback on that if you guys choose to participate. Other big things in the WWE news this week, Corey Graves and Carmella had their kid, which led us to Kevin Owens being on commentary on SmackDown, which was also a lot of fun until he went to go smack the face off of Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. But Kevin Owens on commentary, Kevin Owens coming out with a tie, all that kind of fun stuff. There was two Kevins on commentary, that was funny. All stemming from the great news that Corey Graves and Carmella have had their kid. We know the troubles that they've had in the past, even though they're not, or they shouldn't really be public business. But, you know, couldn't be happier for them. Carmella's awesome. Corey Graves, I love on commentary. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but, like, this is real life stuff. So try to be happy for real life people during the real life stuff. Two quick things we're going to get into. We got two title matches set for Survivor Series / War Games. We got Gunther versus The Miz. Let's talk about this really quickly. We had the Fatal 4-Way on Raw. It was The Miz, Ricochet, Ivar, and Bronson Reed. And it was supposed to be that, what was it? It was The Miz pinning Reed and Ivar pinning Ricochet. And it was supposed to be a double pin. It was supposed to be a tie. That was supposed to lead into their match next week. There was a mishap in this match where Ricochet kicked out where he wasn't supposed to. So the match just went to The Miz because the referee has to call it as he sees it. And there was also a spot in the match where Ricochet did that really weird, like, belly flop off the ropes into a Rana that was amazing until you replay it and realize that he dropped himself on his damn heed. We got to avoid this because Rey Mysterio, of all people, got saved from dropping himself on his own heed on Crown Jewel with Logan Paul. So if you don't like Logan Paul, at least give him credit for making sure that, Rey Mysterio didn't kill himself. The botch in the Fatal 4-Way is unfortunate. I've heard mixed rumors as to whether or not Ricochet has a concussion. Obviously, we hope he doesn't. In that same match, they mentioned that Eric, the tag team partner of Ivar, obviously, has just gone through, what is it, C4, C5 neck spinal fusion surgery. So, while we're talking about that, let's not have another person fall on their head. But, here's the thing. They're turning Miz babyface. And as a Miz fan, I don't even know if I want to see Miz as babyface, but I do think that the people are like, oh, he can't possibly be a babyface. He's so fucking, like, despisable, blah, 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 blah. I mean, let the guy do what he's going to do. He's going to lose. Like, what do you want? Oh, he's going to have to sell for the it kicks. Yeah, Gunther's probably going to catch his leg and throw it into the fifth row. You got nothing to worry about. Gunther ain't getting dethroned. As we go into next year, he might be dethroned because of all the international shows that they're doing and the fact that he can't leave America for the first, like, 6 months because of some stupid visa thing. But that's another story for another day. I don't think that person is going to be The Miz. I think it would be, if anything, because they're looking at them as sort of projects. Bronson Reed needs something to boil him up a little bit. And depending on how long Eric is going to be out, this Ivar singles run has been a lot of fun, but you got to give him some substance. Ivar versus Gunther at a big pay-per-view would be absolutely fine and absolutely awesome. And just, you know, it's the old Big E special. It's two big beefy men slapping man meat, as we all know. But Gunther versus The Miz, it's going to be at Survivor Series. It's going to be at War Games. So, and I'll say what I've said at every War Games, going back to NXT, you can really do whatever else you want on the card, because people are tuning into War Games for War Games. It's not that serious. And as a fan of The Miz, it's kind of cool to see him back in the Intercontinental title picture. Similarly, we got Zoe Stark going up against Rhea Ripley at Survivor Series. She's also not going to win, but it was still a cool moment for her in the Women's Battle Royal. A lot of other cool stories came out of that as well. Xia Li attacking Becky Lynch and then thinking she herself was not going to be removed was hilarious. The Creeds have now officially signed to Monday Night Raw, bringing with them Ivy Nile, who had an amazing showing in the Battle Royal and got eliminated by Nia Jax, who was already not in the match. So that's not really a lot for her. You had Maxine Dupri in there representing the Alpha Academy. The Alpha Academy's advice to her was, you know, don't do what Tozawa does. Don't go for people, like, ridiculously bigger than you. And she failed to follow that advice almost immediately. That Battle Royal came down to who are sort of kind of tag team partners sometimes, and that's Zoe Stark and Shayna Baszler. Now, you guys have been hearing me campaign about the Shayna Baszler-Rhea Ripley match for a long time. I was actively cheering for her to not win this because, as I said, Survivor Series, it's not the title matches that really get all the focus. And also, I want to see her, if not at WrestleMania, then at least closer to WrestleMania, get that shot. I don't want to see her get it at the Rumble for similar reasons to Survivor Series. I would love, if she's not going to get it at Mania, I would love for Shayna Baszler to be Rhea Ripley's opponent in Perth at the Elimination Chamber. I think that would be a lot of fun. But Zoe Stark winning this is awesome. Zoe Stark going into the Fatal 5-Way at Crown Jewel as the, you know, the scrappy pitbull underdog type character and holding her own was awesome. She hit the Z360 on Rhea Ripley at one point, and Rhea Ripley sold it like a boss because she's awesome. That match is going to be fun, much like the Gunther match is going to be fun. I don't think those titles are changing hands, as again, I'm going to get repetitive, not the point of the pay-per-view. Now, three big stories here. What do we want to do? We want to do the implosion of the LWO, the very first War Games announced, and the growth of Damage Control. So I'm going to go in order that I'm interested. So that's how that's going to go, because it's my show. The LWO kind of imploded. Now, this has been coming for a long time. Everybody's been predicting this for a while. Ever since Rey Mysterio won the United States Championship in the title shot that should have been Santos Escobar. Santos Escobar got attacked. Rey Mysterio took his place and ended up winning the championship. And they've been seeding dissension ever since. So we go to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia had the announcement that it was going to be Rey Mysterio versus Logan Paul, because it's a big Saudi show and it's a big Logan Paul match. And it was, I don't care what anybody says, that match was a lot of fun, other than Rey Mysterio almost dropping himself on his damn head and Logan Paul saving him. The rest of the match was a lot of fun. The ending of that match, where Logan Paul's guy comes in with the brass knuckles, gives them to Logan Paul. Logan Paul gets sent to the opposite side of the ring, drops the knuckles again, gets the guy on the outside, tries to get the brass knuckles again, and gets cut off by Santos Escobar. Santos Escobar chases him away, but leaves the knuckles on the apron there. I went over all this in the Crown Jewel preview, which is why I'm speed running it now. Basically, he leaves them on the apron. Logan Paul picks them up. I still think intentionally takes a 619 just so that when Ray goes for the West Coast Pop, he can punch him out of midair with his titanium fist that also has brass knuckles on it, which is just why be a dick once when you can be a dick twice. He leaves with the championship, and as I said in the review, I think that's going to do all kinds of cool things for WWE that the so-called purists don't really want to admit. So that's fine. So what did we do? We had LWO open up SmackDown. It was announced before the beginning of the show that Carlito was going to take on Bobby Lashley later on in the night. So everybody in the LWO but Carlito comes out. So you've got Rey, you've got Zelina, you've got Santos, you've got Cruz del Toro, and you've got Joaquin Wilde. he's basically cutting a promo on the fact that Logan Paul's a thief, etc. Carlito comes out and says, hey, Ray, you know, I know you're trying to be a nice guy. I know you're focused on your title and you're focused on Logan Paul, but why don't you put the focus where it belongs? Are we really not going to talk about it? Santos, like, fucked you over. Santos sort of gets pissed off and leaves and goes to shove him, and he has a basically has a temper tantrum through the crowd. Ray and Zelina Vega go to follow him to, you know, try and keep the family together. You know, it's got Fast and the Furious vibes. That's not the first time I've made that joke. Now, the interesting part about all of this is Santos storms off, Ray storms off, Zelina Vega storms off. Carlito, who just came out and accused Santos Escobar, who was the leader of Legado del Fantasma before they became the LWO, he didn't have his buddies with him. Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde stayed at ringside. They stayed in the corner of Carlito, so not necessarily immediately following their former leader out of the ring, which was really, really interesting. And then the match happened, and you wanted to even out the odds. You wanted the babyface to have some backup because Bobby Lashley is going to come out with the Street Profits. They fight with the Street Profits on the outside as Carlito and Bobby Lashley are having their match in the ring. Now, commentary went way too far into, hey, these guys fought like 15 years ago, which I don't think is what you want to bring up. I don't think you want to be aging your superstars. Another story for another day. Santos Escobar comes back to help out his Legado buddies, but the distraction causes Montez Ford to kick Carlito in the head. Bobby Lashley gets the win, and there's a 3-on-1 beatdown after the match. Now, Santos came out to help his Legado buddies, did not help Carlito as he was getting a 3-on-1 beatdown. Rey Mysterio eventually comes back out, so everybody got two entrances. Hey, TV time. Everybody got two entrances. Ray comes down with a chair, chases off Lashley and the Street Profits, and they kind of leave. They kind of shrug it off. It's like, all right, you know, does the whole Simpsons, well, I guess my work is done here thing, and they fuck off because they know that the group that they were just fighting is about to fall apart. Ray gets in Santos's face. Why didn't you help Carlito? We're all supposed to be family, doing his best Dominic Toretto. I was about to say Dominic Mysterio there. Dominic Toretto impression. There's a shoving match. Ray goes to check on Carlito. Santos gets frustrated and decks him. They shove each other a little bit. Ray does some really bad acting here, I'm not gonna lie. It's exactly like the first time he actually hit Dominic back and, you know, staring. You know, people that want to criticize NXT, old black and gold NXT, when with the one final beat thing was going on, they always used to say, oh my god, look at Gargano overacting. He's staring at his hands and doing the why am I so violent thing. Ray kind of did that here. He's got this shoving match going on with Santos, and it's kind of cool because you can have in a family, which is the metaphor that they use here, you can have a shoving match, you can have an argument, you can slap your teammate or your brother or your family member or whatever and be like, you know, dummy up and fly straight, what the fuck are you talking about? What you can't really defend is Santos basically picking up Ray and sideways spine-bustering him into the ring post and then trapping his leg between the ring post and the stairs and drop-kicking the stairs. I love Zelina Vega, but her coming out and doing the same thing Ray was doing, what are you doing? We're supposed to be family. And, you know, really, really trying to fake cry. I love the story. The acting was a bit much. That's all I'm going to say. He leaves, and once again, like, looming over Rey Mysterio, taking care of him, is not only Zelina Vega and Carlito, but also Santos's Legado guys, Cruz del Toro and Joaquin Wilde. So their loyalty doesn't seem to be with Santos anymore, which is an interesting thing that I wouldn't have predicted. I wouldn't have predicted that they would have stayed with him. I would have thought it would be an even split, like Ray and Carlito on one side and the former members of Legado del Fantasma on the other side. They're not doing that, or at least it doesn't seem like they're doing that just yet. It seems like Santos, realistically for the first time, because Santos Escobar, if you remember, when he won the Cruiserweight tournament way, way, way back in NXT, when he was still the masked wrestler, and that's when they were doing all the kidnappings in the NXT parking lot, when Legado was revealed, he was really with Legado ever since then. Now, they were with Electra Lopez, who was replaced by Zelina Vega, which was a great call by WWE, and then they eventually joined up with Rey Mysterio, they became the LWO, Carlito came back in San Juan, Puerto Rico at the Backlash show. They've had Bad Bunny involved at some points. They've had Dragon Lee, who was involved for a little bit, and then I guess they're letting him go out on his own. So this, like, Santos has never been on his own. So the biggest, like, the turn wasn't surprising. The fact that he's turning on his own was a little bit more surprising. And the fact that he didn't push the turn. What pushed the turn was the accusation from Carlito, because he could claim anonymity, like, hey, yeah, I dropped the Nux, but I was trying to chase that guy away so that he couldn't fuck you over, so that you could win your match, so that you could beat Logan Paul, etc. But the anonymity was completely brushed away by Carlito, who still feels like, I guess he's got a full-time contract now, but he still feels like a part-timer, like he's there sometimes. So that part of it was a little bit surprising. The fact that Legado didn't stick together as a trio within the larger faction was kind of surprising. The best part about all of this, that I think, is A, you're going to get matches between Santos and Rey Mysterio, which are going to be a lot of fun. B, this immediately makes a clean break between Rey Mysterio and the United States Championship, because if you didn't give him something arguably bigger to do after losing that title, the wrestling world, the fan base, etc., would be saying, well, why doesn't he want to go get his title back? WWE are absolutely notorious for their automatic rematch clauses. Well, he's got bigger things to deal with now. He's got family issues now. I'm going to make a Dominic Toretto reference once again. I'm going to say Fast and the Furious once again, because you got to do the big, deep Vin Diesel voice and say, he's got to deal with his family. I'm never going to do that again. We've established on this channel that I shouldn't do accents, but I think it's a win on every level. I think it's a huge step up for Santos Escobar to be on his own for the first time, and to be going out on his own against Rey Mysterio is great. Pulls Rey Mysterio away from the United States Championship. Let's be real for a split second. Rey Mysterio does not need the United States Championship at this point in his career, and I'm 99% sure that he's going to hold that United States Championship until WrestleMania and then drop it to LA Knight. Yeah. Because, I'm sorry, L.A. Knight, yeah, is he going to win the Royal Rumble? Nah. That's my L.A. Knight content for the evening. So, really, really good, really fun. I thought we were going to get some of that on SmackDown after Crown Jewel. I didn't think we were going to get all of it. The last thing we saw was him leaving the building by himself. Still in his, it's that whole typical, like, oh, he's so frustrated he didn't even get out of his gear. He's just dragging his back. It's hard for them to look angry leaving a building while they've got their little dolly cart suitcases. I'm sorry, that's just a funny visual to me. Jackie Redmond, who still seems new to me on the backstage interview scene, because I've been watching her up here in Canada on Sportsnet 360. Kind of like Renee Paquette, who, you know, what used to be Renee Young, who used to be Renee something else, because she was on Sportsnet back when it was The Score, before she went to WWE, before she went to AEW. Arda Ocal did the same thing, and there was somebody else that I can't remember. But Jackie Redmond caught up with Santos and asked her, why would you do that to Rey Mysterio? And all he would say is, he had it coming. So, way, way, way back when, hey, I got injured, I'm supposed to have a title shot, how can I possibly have my title shot? Rey, you take the title shot for me. It's totally fine. I'm not angry at all. Survey says that was nonsense. The only thing missing was the what culture prediction of the electric chair into the electric chair drop. That would have been nice too, but you know, smashing your mentor between a steel post and some steel steps is a nice way to go as well. We've got our first War Games announced, and it's pretty cut and dry. I had a lot of feelings, and a lot of people had a lot of feelings, that they were going to make some super mega bad guy team, some amalgamation of the Bloodline and the Judgment Day, and they're not doing that, and I'm pretty okay with that, because what the fuck is the Bloodline these days? I don't say that in a bad way. The way they're falling apart is awesome, but you can't then expect them to be a team and be a bigger team with another team, because Judgment Day is the new Bloodline. It just is. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about everything that happened at Crown Jewel that I did in the review. So this is going to be retreading for anybody that listened to that already. Sammy beats JD McDonagh on the pre-show, which was awesome. Sammy steals the Money in the Bank briefcase from Damian Priest so he can't cash in on Rollins after his match with Drew McIntyre. Priest versus Cody takes place. Judgment Day tries to come down, and they get cut off by Jey Uso. So you've got Sammy helping Rollins, bringing Rollins into the fold. You've got Jey helping Cody because they're former tag team partners, etc. On Raw, you had the big news that Seth Rollins was going to defend his world championship against Sami Zayn in the main event that night. Judgment Day took a bit of a detour and beat the shit out of the New Day. Shrug emoji, okay. That was a lot of fun. I like the New Day, but please put a singles title on Xavier Woods, because out of the three of them, he's the one that deserved it the most, and he's the one that didn't get it. He got a little shitty crown in Saudi Arabia, and that was terrible. We got the announcement that Jey and Cody are once again getting another rematch for the Tag Team Championships next week, which is nice. And then we flash forward to the sort of the flashpoint, the solidification of what we all really pretty much knew. You've got Sammy, you've got Drew, you don't have Drew. You got Sammy, you've got Rollins, you've got Cody, you've got Jey. All of these people work well together. Cody's everybody's friend, especially at a press conference. He's tag teaming with Jey right now. Jey has a tie with Sami Zayn, and Sami Zayn and Seth Rollins have a newfound respect after Sami helped at Crown Jewel, and then they had their wonderful match on Raw for the championship as well. So they're a tight-knit group. Judgment Day is a tight-knit group. Sami versus Seth Rollins. Rollins gets a clean win. I thought that they would have had Judgment Day just come in and fuck up the match, but they didn't. They're getting away from some of those bad tropes. But they try to attack afterwards. What happened was Sami Zayn got a title shot on Raw, and part of that was him having to give the briefcase back to Adam Pearce, to give back to Damian Priest, who was pissed off at the beginning of the show about not having his briefcase, despite the fact that he had it in his hand. That was kind of funny. They come down to attack afterwards. All of Judgment Day, they just come in, they just attack, you know, you should have known better, etc., etc., etc. Seth and Sammy are already there. Clearly, Cody joins the fray, Jey joins the fray. All the security, all the guards, all the, you know, I thought they were going to do it. I thought they were going to do the whole, like, clear the roster. Like, what's the escalation in WWE? You know, you have the referees, you have the security guards, you occasionally have fake cops, and then you clear out the actual roster to separate the other superstars. A la something like The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, which is a lot of fun. Adam Pearce just loses his shit, and he just yells at all the kids. He gets all of them on the outside of the ring. He's the only one standing on the inside of the ring. Tired of this. You want to play games? You want to play games? We're going to play games. Survivor Series War Games. I'm really glad that that was a thing, and that he made such a meme of himself that people aren't just going to be overriding it with William Regal stuff, because the William Regal stuff is cool, but he's in the background. He can't be on TV, so stop pretending like he's going to come out on TV. William Regal ain't going to show up at Survivor Series. You know who's going to show up? It's going to be CM Punk, but that's another story for another day. So, right now, here's the thing. They've changed it, because initially, in the advertisements for War Games, they advertised them as 5-on-5 matches. You know, five men and five women and blah, 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 all the way down the line. Right now, what do you have? Right now, you've got a perfect 4-on-4. Right now, you've got Finn, Priest, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh taking on Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and Seth Rollins. Now, two things, two rumors, two jokes, two questions. Rumor is that Survivor Series is when Randy Orton is going to make his comeback, which is awesome. If he's ready, if he wants to, if he's able to, all those caveats to come back and be part of this, that's awesome. I do question somebody who's been out a year with back issues coming back in a multi-person cage match with two rings and all kinds of things that could go wrong. But that's not for me to say. That's for him to say. The other thing is that Judgment Day might be recruiting Drew McIntyre. I don't know how I feel about that, because War Games, going way back to when it sort of became the Undisputed Era's match, it was always like this one solid, defined unit versus all the people that have rallied to come against that unit. Now, if you want to say that it's Judgment Day and this other guy, That's it takes away from it a little bit. It's not to say that I don't want Drew McIntyre in the match. Look at him. The guy's a beast. He's in the form of his life. He could be a big power player in that match. I just don't know if I like the look of it. It's like, you know, before what happened, we all thought it was going to be Damage Control and the tag team champions of Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. Now, if you're Damage Control, you would recruit the tag team champions because they're not only champions, but they're champions as a team. Teamwork is required for the War Games match, but it's not the same as people rallying to take out this one force. People rallied together to take out the Bloodline. That's how the story is supposed to work. People should rally to take out the singular threat of the Judgment Day. Now, that being said, that's just a principle thing of mine. Not to say that the additions of Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton won't make this match awesome, but I think their last-minute additions, kind of like putting Cody into the Bloodline thing, was like a last-minute addition, and that's why I didn't think he should be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. I still don't, by the way, but I'm almost willing to cede territory on that now because there's other bigger, better things that I want to see. If it stays 4-on-4, and that's why they've changed the advertisement, Finn, Priest, Dom, and JD versus Cody, Jay, Sammy, and Seth is a good enough match on its own. Now, here's my theory. I've thrown this up on a couple different super chats, on a couple different live streams, and on a couple different conversations on social media. If I was booking this, and yes, it basically focuses on two people and ignores the other six people in the ring. Seth Rollins is the biggest name in Monday Night Raw, in his own opinion. And, you know, it's Monday Night Rollins. He is the champion. So he wants to be the fighting champion, he wants to set the example, etc. He should see himself as the captain of this team. Now, he's, again, the last one to sort of get involved with the Judgment Day, as opposed to the other ones. But he should want to be the one on the babyface team setting the example, setting the pace right from the off. Seth Rollins should start the match. Damian Priest, the powerhouse on the other side, should be doing the opposite. He should be the smart, conniving, selfish heel that keeps himself back to play cleanup hitter. He should be the last one in the cage. Now, what happens when the last person enters the cage? When the last person enters the cage for War Games, that's when, you know, the quote-unquote match beyond begins. You can't score a victory until everybody's in the match. So what I would do, because Damian Priest is still Mr. Money in the Bank, I would have him standing in the pod at the top of the ramp with his briefcase, flashing it around, making it look like he's just, you know, being a show-off and being an egotist and being everything that the Judgment Day are. If I was booking this, I would have him come out last. I would have him enter the cage last. And as he enters the cage, I would have him cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. The match goes on, as it normally would. The match ends when Judgment Day kick the living shit out of Seth Rollins, give Damian Priest the pin, because then Damian Priest, in representing the Judgment Day, in one pin, takes the War Games match and the World Heavyweight Championship. And that is the least way possible. Like, if you want to talk about people that are super, super fans of Seth Rollins and don't want him to look bad ever, that's the most protected way for Seth Rollins to lose the World Heavyweight Championship ever. Besides that, a big 4-on-1 beatdown in the cage before and after the match is over, if they want, is a great way to write Seth Rollins off, let him rest and recover, and maybe he comes back in the Rumble. Maybe they set up a rematch, maybe. Anyways, that's my idea. They're absolutely not going to do it, but that's my idea for the War Games. Now, the most, to me anyways, the most interesting thing happened on Friday, and it wasn't LWO, and it wasn't the Judgment Day, and it wasn't the Bloodline. It was Damage Control. Now, I know people like to shit on Damage Control. I don't know why. Usually because they're going up against Bianca Belair, and nobody's ever allowed to vote for anybody that's going up against Bianca Belair. Well, there's been dissension in the Damage Control group for a while. It's been an odd dynamic because Dakota Kai can't wrestle. She wasn't cleared, and she was cleared enough to be there, but not be actively participating. She's walking around with her knee brace on and whatever. And the thing between Bayley and Io is Bayley's taking credit for all of Io's success and doing it in a way that it sounds like she's just bragging about her friend. Oh, look at what my friend did with my help and all this sort of thing. And Io's been trying at some points to be a baby face within a heel faction and telling Bayley to stay in the back, saying she wants to do it on her own. She got a huge baby face reaction at Backlash. Let's not forget, going up against Bianca Belair, so maybe somebody else other than Bianca Belair. But Bianca Belair went away. She fucked off. She went on vacation. She went for a spritz, whatever the hell she did. Apparently her and Montez Ford did a reality show. Montez Ford deserves everything in the world because goddamn. Anyways, she came back from her quote-unquote injury, her quote-unquote beatdown, and because it's Bianca Belair, and she's got all the leftover Sasha Banks treatment, she immediately slotted into a title shot at Crown Jewel, which I thought was going to destroy everything, but it didn't. What did it do instead? You had Bayley come down to try and help Io. Io's really frustrated because she's been telling her, like, no, don't worry, I've got this, and I've got this, in this case, didn't mean, hey, I'm going to do it by myself. I've got this means, oh, by the way, I've got Kairi Sane in my back pocket, and she's going to make her return at Crown Jewel, and it's going to be fucking awesome. Now, going into SmackDown, Bayley has sort of set this, I'm going to, you know, set the stage right for damage control. She comes out, she brags about the success of Damage Control, how they've been tag team champions under her leadership. They won Money in the Bank under her leadership. Io Sky became the champion under her leadership and all this kind of thing. But I was really blindsided at Crown Jewel. You know, you brought in this person, you didn't tell me, you didn't let me in on the plan, etc. She calls out Io Sky for a conversation. Io Sky comes out with Dakota Kai and Kairi Sane. And basically says, you know, you want us to be successful. Kairi Sane came in and helped us to be successful. Like, what's the problem? And Bayley cues up the footage from months ago where she beat the shit out of Kairi Sane when Kairi Sane was let go from the company. Let's be real for a second. And she says, you know, don't you think she's going to have some problems with me? And then Kairi got the microphone and said, like, I'm not here to fight you. I have a lot of respect for you and I forgive you. Which means that Bayley is dead down the line. But for now, it's fine because they've got one more member in their group. And isn't that wonderful? I think it's awesome that when Kairi Sane said, I forgive you, she put her arms out for a hug and Bayley immediately said, no, I don't do that anymore. Because it's like, you guys know me, I'm doing the NXT flashback shows right now. Like, I've been talking about a whole lot of babyface hugger Bayley. So Bayley immediately doing the no, I don't do that anymore thing. Cut off by Bianca Belair because, of course, she was. She bitches about losing for a while, but then she says something along the lines of, I'm not the only one that's sick of Damage Control. Here's somebody else. Here's Charlotte, and she comes out, and Charlotte tries to give Bianca Belair the rub, so you gotta feel bad for Charlotte. And there's somebody else who's not only sick of Damage Control, but is really, really disappointed, and Kairi Sane brings out Asuka, and very, very quickly on commentary, they say, we're just hearing something. These ladies are going to have a trios match later on. It's not a trios match, it's a 3-on-3, but whatever. In the trios match, and this is one of the most beautiful things I've seen this year, Bianca Belair goes for the hot tag to Asuka. Asuka short arms her, mists her in the face, and there's a 4-on-2 beatdown. Obviously not a 5-on-2 beatdown because Dakota Kai is still on the outside, technically not able to do anything. 4-on-2 beatdown. Asuka joins Kairi Sane, Io Shirai, and Bayley with, you know, support from the outside from Dakota Kai as they beat the shit out of Bianca Belair and Charlotte. So, hey, look at it. They beat up Bianca Belair and Charlotte. Something for me, something for everybody else. Something for me, something for the sheep. Everybody wins, everybody loses, whatever the case may be. My girl Shotzi comes down and tries to even the odds, but even 3 is not 4, so they still stand tall. And all 5 new members of Damage Control stand high with their arms raised at the end of SmackDown. Now, first of all, that's fucking awesome. You've got a faction that can, like, Io Sky, Dakota Kai, and Asuka are probably going to be a faction on their own at some point. Somebody on Twitter called me racist for saying that. It's just logical. They've all known each other since way before WWE. Their connection exists longer than it does with Bayley and Dakota Kai. Please get over yourselves. Please go touch some grass. But for the meantime, in the meantime and in between time, I should say, leading into Survivor Series, you've got a 5-person damage control team. Dakota Kai, still drastically underrated. Bayley, who's the GOAT. And these three other ladies who have all sort of re-found each other. They're going to be in a War Games situation as well. Now, here is the problem. We don't know the medical condition of Dakota Kai, whether she's going to be screaming on enthusiasm from the outside, or whether she's going to magically say on the go-home SmackDown, you know, do the old Bret Hart, put the cast on the table, oh, by the way, I am cleared, let's fucking go. Either way, the huge conversation now becomes who joins the babyface team. Because Bianca, Charlotte, and Shotzi are three people. They are three people. That is not four. That is definitely not five. Now, I'll say it right now. Similar to what I said about the men's War Games match. If it stays with four, if it's Bayley, Io, Kairi, and Asuka, and Dakota Kai can't wrestle, and it's just the four of them, Bianca, Charlotte, Shotzi need one more competitor, that's going to be your debut of Jade Cargill. It just is. Now, if it becomes a conversation of they do have Dakota, and they need to pick two people, I don't know if they throw Jade Cargill in the mix there, because I don't know if you throw in Jade Cargill's debut as one of the surprises. So here we go. Zelina Vega is having problems with her own faction. There's nobody in that whole situation that she can fight, but she's pissed off. I could very easily see her going with the baby faces and being like, yo, my life's pretty shit right now. I could take some aggression out on somebody. Do you need an extra person? Why not me? Now, Mia Yim has been all over social media recently, throwing old footage of NXT and her match with Io Shirai when they were doing War Games. And people used to hate it. They used to do the ladder match before War Games for the team advantage. And I thought that was a lot of fun. And Mia Yim and Io Sky really fucked each other, or Io Shirai as she was back at the time, really fucked each other up. Mia Yim took a ladder to the face, and I think that took her out of the match, actually. That's where we got the Dakota Tegan Knox turn and all that fun stuff. But basically, she's got that footage of her getting smoked in the face with a ladder. And the caption underneath says something along the lines of, like, you know, blood requires more blood or something like that. So Mia Yim is a great fourth member of that team. Zelina Vega is a great option as well. And the other rumor is, and yet, no, it doesn't make any sense, and no, I don't care. The other rumor is that they're going to bring Becky Lynch over from Raw. So Bianca, Charlotte, Shotzi, and Becky make a great team. Bianca, Charlotte, Shotzi, Mia Yim, Zelina Vega would make a good team. Bianca, Charlotte, Shotzi, and the debuting Jade Cargill makes an awesome team. Any combination of these is going to be a lot of fun. I just think if they're going to debut Jade, they're going to make it like she is the surprise, not she is one of the surprises. Here they both are. Because I think that waters it down a little bit. So I think when we establish whether or not Dakota Kai is in the match, that's going to kind of tell us if Jade Cargill's getting her debut or not. Now, debuting Jade Cargill on the same night that you bring back Randy Orton and CM Punk, because I think CM Punk is happening. I don't care. The signs are everywhere. So I think it could be a lot of fun. The team in general of Bayley, Io, Kairi, Asuka, and Dakota is awesome. I think if that group stayed together, and if I didn't already know that they were going to turn on Bayley, I would say almost split the team. Have one of them go to the other show and try to bring the other belt into the group as well. Have them be a super group. But the way they did it, the way they brought in Kairi and teased some dissension with Bayley and sort of brought them together temporarily and had Asuka get all mad about it only to turn in the match and rejoin everybody, it layered up. And again, I'm going to say it once again, much like the LWO thing, it was something we all knew was coming, but we didn't think it was going to quite come like this. That sounded dirtier than I wanted it to. But, like, where are we right now? We have got, let me go back to my previous page and my previous page. We've got Judgment Day versus Team Cody right now, till we get two more team members announced. We probably have Rey versus Santos round one at Survivor Series. That's a decent prediction. Gunther versus The Miz. Zoe Stark versus Shayna Baszler. If Io Sky is going to be in the War Games match, there's not going to be a match for her title. Seth Rollins is in the War Games match, so there's no match for his title. Roman Reigns is swinging his dick on the Island of Relevancy until the Royal Rumble, apparently, so that's not going to be a title match. And you've got any number of assorted awesome women that are going into the women's War Games match. I was about to say Royal Rumble again. Sorry, it's tired in here, by the way. It's a pretty decent start to building the War Games card, I'm not going to lie. Do I think Logan Paul is going to be on this card defending the US title? Probably not, because you can't fast track him an opponent, and who would be his opponent now has other things to deal with, family. So I don't think you need to do that. The Tag Team Champions, whether it after this Monday on Raw, whether it's Cody and Jay, whether it's Finn and Priest, the Tag Team Champions are also in a War Games match. The Women's Tag Team Champions, I don't know. I don't know if they know they have Tag Team Champions. I'm just saying. I kind of put it out there the other day. Tag Team Champions in Impact were Chelsea Green and Deonna Purrazzo at one point. So Chelsea Green brought her friend over at WWE. That'd be cool. There was a lot of photos going around this weekend of Rhea Ripley and Killer Kelly. And fuck me, that would be a good team. There's a lot of crossover. A lot more crossover than there used to be. So WWE maybe loosening their sphincters a little bit on shit like that. I mean, half the wrestling couples right now crossover WWE, AEW, Impact lines anyway. So I really don't know what to say about that. War Games is looking good. I know I didn't give you a full breakdown of both shows this week. Tell me if you guys prefer it this way. Tell me if you guys just want me to drill down on the key stuff rather than doing full show rundowns. Because actually, just doing this, I've actually liked doing it this way. Now, that won't work on a week where there isn't a big story to talk about. Like, three different groups went through three very different changes. LWO fell apart. Damage Control grew. Judgment Day has War Games on the horizon. They're not always going to come bing, bang, boom like that every week, so this won't always be possible. But please let me know what you think about this as an alternative way of doing WWE last week. Also, on a side note, I know a lot of people are shitting on it because they just don't like fun. The Creed Brothers versus the returning DIY was fucking awesome on Raw. I don't care. Come argue with a wall. Anyways, I've been Spaz, your YWC Reality Check. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later, but for right now, I am tagging it.